And hour number two on Friday is always the Federal News Countdown, and what that entails is two people who are experts in the world of the federal government choosing the news stories they think are most important to people who work for the federal government or do business with the government from the past week, ranking them in order from number three to number one, and coming in to the studio, as my two guests today have done, to talk about those stories and talk about the reasons for the selection of those stories. And my lineup today is impeccable, as I am fortunate to often have. Rob Burton of Venable, former deputy OFPP administrator, is with me today. Nice to see you, sir. How's business? Everything good?
Francis, everything's great. Nice to be here with you.
Terrific. It's great to have you. Alan Balutis of Cisco is with us as well, and it's good to see you as always, Alan. Thank you for coming in.
Glad to be here.
And is everything well? Everything good?
Everything's good.
You look terrific, so it's
Thanks
great to have
asking.
You guys here. I'm happy to have you here. You've chosen great stories, and I am looking forward to counting them all down. And so we'll start, of course, with
number three.
Rob, your third most important federal news story of the week is headline, DOD pushes for 2011 spending increase. It's my colleague Jason Miller's story about the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee hearing this week. I'm struck by the language that Deputy Secretary Lynn used to talk about how a CR would affect DOD.
Well, that's exactly why I picked this, Francis. I think the headline itself is somewhat interesting at a time when the president's under severe criticism for not cutting the budget enough. Here we have DOD saying we don't have enough money.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you what really struck me about this was the deputy secretary's focus on acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what really concerned me about it, because I think it says a whole lot. And quote, he said they may have to cancel contracts, that surely some of those contracts would be contracts performed by small and disadvantaged businesses, that this would be inevitable. It really strikes me, Francis, that we would have the deputy secretary talking about canceling contracts, especially ones that have been awarded to small businesses,
mm-hmm.
that would be their number one ingoing position as far as saving money. I mean, I think this is a serious problem. Now, he didn't say this, but you know what else I'm sure he wanted to say is that money for training acquisition personnel, money for hiring acquisition personnel will definitely not be.
How seriously do you take this story and this claim?
I think you could
put this in the category of the government shutdown and, oh, we're going to have to close the Washington Monument kind of ploy.
Oh, no, I think with the administration's insourcing initiative, this goes right in hand. And hand in hand with the administration's insourcing initiative, I'm representing small businesses that basically are facing going out of business.
I don't know. It seems to – couldn't you read this as a little bit of saber-rattling and the idea of oh, my God, we're going to face a budget cut, so we're going to have to cut contracting, and the big effect will be on small businesses.
How much of this is real and how much of this is posturing? Well, if I wasn't representing small businesses that are facing going out of business, I would agree with you. But I think that, in fact, the fact that even if it is political posturing, to say this publicly shows, I think, that the department is somewhat insensitive to small businesses.
Another point that Secretary Lynn was making at this hearing, Alan, was the idea that if DOD doesn't get its own budget bill for the rest of 2011, if it has a CR, that there will be all kinds of problems there. What do you think of that idea? Do you go along with that?
Well, I think you have to separate the reality from some of the posturing. I mean, the whole government is facing curtailment in a couple of weeks if the Congress and the White House can't come to an agreement on an appropriation for the balance of the year. So I think we'll be seeing lots of stories about this, about what are the consequences across government if they can't come to this kind of resolution. I honestly think, I mean, again, the Department of Defense has some challenges fighting a couple of wars, but the Department of Defense is in a relatively strong budgetary position given some of the other departments in government. And the cutbacks they're talking about taking in the out years are ones against increases that were proposed earlier. We're not talking about really any reductions in funding as we are for a substantial number of civilian agencies.
Rob Burton, story number three on the countdown is headlined, DOD pushes for 2011 spending increase, and it's by Federal News Radio's Jason Miller. Alan, your story number three is from GovExec, the headline, Federal Workers Rally Against Wisconsin Governor. The idea that federal employees are going to Wisconsin, depending what they're doing and whose time they're doing on and so on, may not wind up being a big help for the whole effort.
This was actually my hardest story to pick, Francis. I had to pick between this, some of the news about Charlie Sheen.
I thought I told you we were going Sheen-free this week.
Wall Street Journal article about the time may be right for the return of galoshes.
But, I saw the galoshes piece.
So this was tough for me. But I picked this story not so much for it as a standalone, but as emblematic of a number of the stories that are appearing these days about some of the budgetary problems in the state. And I think the issues there in terms of not only the challenges and reductions that are being proposed, but what it might augur for some of the deliberations on the federal side, both for 2011 and 2012. I mean, states are facing severe cutbacks. Some governors are really stepping up to this challenge. Some are doing a lot of posturing about cutbacks in education, increasing taxes at the same time they're cutting programs and the like. So I think it's interesting to observe what's happening in some of the state governments and what it may suggest that the federal government will face in terms of budgetary restraints in the next couple of years and some of the hard choices that are going to have to be made there.
Governor Walker, Wisconsin Governor Walker's office in Washington is right next to, it's in one of the buildings where there are a number of TV networks. It's right next to the Senate side of Capitol Hill. And says here in GovExec that there were a fairly large number of people, hundreds, not all federal workers, but hundreds of people rallying in front of Governor Walker's office here in D.C. What I find interesting about the whole thing is that part of the strategy in Wisconsin seems to be we'll just wait them out. And it seems to be working. The amount of people that are actually protesting at the Capitol in Wisconsin has dropped dramatically over the
couple of weeks.
Well, of
course, they've been trying to close the Capitol and have the police move out. But, I mean, look at the new budget that the governor has announced in Wisconsin. He announced this on Tuesday. He proposes cutting state aid to schools by almost $1 billion over the next 2 years. That's an 8% reduction. At the same time, he's going to make it harder for localities and school districts to make up for the shortfall by limiting their ability to raise property taxes. I mean, this is really about, I think, slashing government. So I try to differentiate when you look at what's going on across the state, what some of the, I think, brave governors are doing, and I put in that category people like Jerry Brown in California, and Pat Quinn in Illinois, and Mark Dayton in Minnesota, and Lincoln Chafee in Rhode Island, and what some other governors are doing, like Governor Rick Scott in Florida, where he's got a $3.5 billion budget gap, and he's pushing for $2 billion in corporate and property tax cuts. So I think some governors are doing the hard work of trying to deal with some of these challenges, and others are using it for either posturing or to make cutbacks in unions and in the size of state government, regardless of the worth of some of the programs.
Alan Baludis' story number three in the countdowns from GovExec. The headline is Federal Workers Rally Against Wisconsin Governor, and you can find it linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Story number two from Alan Baludis and from Rob Burton when In-Depth continues on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
If you're like most people, you have many financial questions, like, can I afford to retire? How do I protect my nest egg? Will I outlive my money? Hi, I'm Mark Tabron. We'll tackle these questions and more every Saturday morning at 10:30. Learn how to protect and grow your money with me, Mark Tabron, on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Can't wait until Saturday? Call Tabron & Associates Financial Services at 301-773-3923.
The East Coast rapist has eluded law enforcement since 1997, but a tip from the public could help break the case. I'm Molly Halpern of the Bureau, and this is Wanted by the FBI. The rapist has attacked at least a dozen teens and women in Virginia, Maryland, Rhode Island, and Connecticut. The FBI is assisting local law enforcement with the investigation. Special Agent in Charge, Ronald Hosko.
I'd be very surprised if he moves in a vacuum, if there aren't people who know that this person has gone from jurisdiction A to B. There's somebody out there that knows that information, and that's the information that we need.
The rapist has approached his victims on foot or on bike. He has put them in a headlock or threatened them with weapons.
This person is a danger. There's always the risk of escalation in these assaults. So this is a person that needs to be identified and arrested.
To learn more, visit www.eastcoastrapist.com. Thanks for listening to Wanted by the FBI.
What's the buzz in the federal community? Chris Dorbeck knows it. Join Chris for the Dorbeck Insider weekday afternoons 3 to 7 on Federal News Radio AM. Chris has the insights on who's coming and who's going, new memos, new contracts, fun and helpful ways for federal managers to improve agency productivity while meeting mission goals. The Dorbeck Insider, building federal community by connecting people. Weekday afternoons on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week featuring the selections of Rob Burton of Venable and Alan Balutis of Cisco for the three most important federal news stories of the week, ranked in order from 3 to 1 and posted at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And we're up to
number two.
Second most important news story of the week is chosen by Rob Burton, is headlined Employee Unions to Form Coalition About Feds. It's by our reporter Meg Beasley on federalnewsradio.com. And this looked initially, Rob, this effort spearheaded by NTEU and inviting, she invited Colleen Kelly, the president of NTEU, inviting anybody to join as long as they signed on to the mission, but it looked at first like a PR move. Do you think that's really all there is to this, or is this something a little deeper, do you think?
Well, no, I think it really is about legislative lobbying. I think that you're going to see the unions sort of coming together, and they have legislative priorities that they're pushing. But I think it also is a PR campaign, and I think in that regard there's some merit to it. They want to take a message to America and tell folks about federal employees and what valuable services they provide. There's nothing wrong with that, and a concentrated effort in doing that probably is not a bad idea. The thing that struck me, Francis, is that we got the unions heading up this PR effort, and I don't know if the unions should be the ones doing it. I think the idea of a PR effort to highlight the value of federal employees is a great idea. But to have the federal unions doing it, I think, is a big mistake, because I don't think unions are real popular right now. And a lot of people don't know that there are federal unions. Mm-hmm. I think the general public would be quite surprised to find that there are federal unions, and there are more employees now that are members of federal unions than ever before in the mm-hmm. federal government.
You know, it's interesting.
It's probably not necessarily a good thing to highlight.
And so you're saying it's not a good thing just because people might not receive the message well from them, not because it's something they shouldn't do.
Exactly.
Got Gotcha.
Exactly.
It was interesting today. I was reading a story about this, and one of the comments underneath the story, and I wish I could cite it, but one of the comments, Alan, was somebody responding to the story by saying, federal employees should be allowed to unionize. And I'm reading it thinking, there's a fair amount of federal employees that are already unionized, sir or madam, who doesn't seem to know what's going on in Washington.
Well, as I was saying earlier during our break, I think I've seen reports that the number of workers in public sector unions, number of public sector workers that are unionized within the last year or so surpassed the number of people in the private sector that are unionized. So it's a growing arena. I was going to ask Rob, though, if not the union to do this, who might be a group that would play this role and form this coalition about the federal government?
No,
have groups like the Partnership for Public Service that proselytize about the importance of public service and the good work that federal workers are doing. Are there others that come to mind that would play this role instead of the unions?
Well, if you're looking at the federal government itself, you know, OPM might be a good place.
Well, they tried it a little bit, and it didn't seem to get much traction. They did radio and TV spots,
OPM.
I want to say about 2 years or so ago. And there was kind of a mix. It was partly a recruiting effort and partly an effort to say, hey, federal workers are not your enemies.
Those are like the public sector ads for the Census Bureau that show up at 1 o'clock in the morning on the yachting station or something like that.
You've seen those.
I have. Well, I'm up late.
Francis, I think that we do have a morale problem with federal government, probably more now than ever before. This two-year pay freeze, you know, a lot of my friends are retiring from the federal government. This is affecting their high three calculation for annuity purposes.
Yep.
And I think you're going to see people actually retire now. And I think that...
Isn't it about time?
Well, you can know.
No, I mean, seriously, we got a block of senior people at the upper levels who I think are keeping some of the younger people from elevating. I think, you know, retirements have been slow for a period of time. If we're going to change government, I think it's time for this group to go. This might be a good thing.
Well, I think that's the administration's plan, is to force retirements.
See, it's hard to get this guy fired up. You know,
he's unflappable.
He is.
He can't be flat.
I think that might be his middle name.
Wow.
But I think that my advice to the federal unions would maybe be to take a low road on this. And I think the federal unions have some challenges themselves as far as PR.
Mm-hmm.
And that maybe before they worry about helping somebody else with their public relations problems, they need to think about their own. And in that regard, one of the union's number one legislative priorities are collective bargaining rights for TSA employees, which I think will be a mistake. And so some of the legislative agenda of the federal unions, I think, are going to be quite politicized, quite controversial. And I think it's a great idea to have a PR campaign to talk about the value of federal employees, but I think it's a huge mistake to have the unions do it.
Alan, any thoughts about what the union's role in this should or shouldn't be, or how it might be perceived by people, your average citizen?
No, I think the unions represent these employees. I think it's a legitimate thing for them to talk about the important role that they play. Others may do this as well, but I mean, quite honestly, there's not enough discussion out there about the positive contributions our public employees make, federal, state, and local. So to me, the more people who are contributing to that dialogue and the more who are saying positive things about the many federal workers who provide so much to this nation, the better off we'll be.
Alan Balutis commenting on story number two of the week by Rob Burton on the Federal News Countdown. The story's headline, Employee Unions to Form Coalition About Feds. It's Federal News Radio's Meg Beasley story, and you can find it linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Alan will do your story number two on the Federal News Countdown when we continue on Federal News Radio 1500 AM in just a moment.
ABC News Radio, I'm Kelly O'Donnell. Good news today on the jobs front. The economy added the most private sector jobs in nearly 2 years, driving the unemployment rate to 8.9%. Labor Secretary Hilda Solis.
People are going back to some of their traditional jobs. That's why you see growth in construction, manufacturing, I believe, and even in the automobile industry.
A new day, a new price at the pump. Gas prices have shot up an average of 35 cents a gallon since the uprising in Libya started in mid-February. Overseas, the U.S. Air Force is flying blankets, water, and other relief supplies to Tunisia. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton says it's part of an international effort to help refugees from the fighting in Libya.
We have sent humanitarian assistance teams to both border regions with supplies.
Meanwhile, in Libya, forces loyal to Muammar Gaddafi bombed an arms depot today on the outskirts of Benghazi. Anti-government forces say thousands of people have been killed so far in the conflict. I'm Kelly O'Donnell, NBC News Radio.
Dip. Tostitos chips, scoops to be exact. Batteries for the remote. Pepsi. Red Box movie, no aliens. It's movie night at the Baxter House, so Mr. B ran to Walgreens. With no lines, he was in and out in a flash. Right now at Walgreens, buy 2 2-liter Pepsi products and a participating Frito-Lay snack and get a free one-night Red Box movie rental. Simplify your shopping. With Walgreens, there's a way. Limit one coupon printed per offer. See coupon for exclusion, limitations, and expiration.
And now, a list of things you'll touch today. Alarm clock, toaster, light switch, phone, car key, steering wheel, stapler, escalator, grocery cart, front door, back door toys, microwave, mirror, lamp. Whew, that's a lot of touching. And chances are, most things you touch will also be touched by others. That's why it's important to disinfect the surfaces we touch most with Clorox disinfecting products. They help kill the germs that can live on surfaces for up to 48 hours. So from doorknobs to yo-yos, keep disinfecting with Clorox disinfecting products. Use as directed on hard, non-porous surfaces.
The FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com takes a look at the issues surrounding cloud computing through the eyes of those who are using it every day. We'll share with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the FedCloud blog on Twitter. The FedCloud blog is sponsored by Cisco and Intel.
Hey, it's the Geico Gecko. Now, as a federal employee, you're probably one for a smart presentation, so I've put together some charts and graphs here. There you go. That will help illustrate the money you could save by switching to Geico. First thing you'll notice is that Geico now offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. Now, this is big news. But that shouldn't come as any surprise from a car insurance company that has been serving government employees since 1936. And as you can see on this graph here, it's probably why we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. Yeah, no, I do actually realise you can't see these, but trust me, they're rather impressive. Especially the 97% customer satisfaction rate. And when you consider it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more, well, all you GS7 employees or above should just contact Geico. Tell them, Mike.
Hey folks, this is Mike Causey, and the Gecko said it best. Most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above, could get a discount on their car insurance. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
Profile America, Friday, March 4th. A festival gets underway today in Houston, Minnesota, that is literally a hoot. It's the annual International Festival of Owls. The whole thing got started with the discovery of a great horned owl chick, which had fallen out of its nest and permanently damaged a wing. Rescued and named Alice, the owl is the guest of honor each year at the festival, which features storytelling and face painting for youngsters and a hooting contest, as well as serious presentations and field trips. There is also a Hall of Fame and a banquet. Each year in the U.S., more than 71 million people enjoy observing wildlife, with some 56 million feeding wildlife in or near their yard. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
The administration has established a new information sharing environment office to discover, protect, fuse, and reuse data across 5 core communities: intelligence, defense, foreign affairs, law enforcement, and homeland security. Shmendra Paul has been tasked as ISE lead to increase government-wide data sharing efficiencies through the use of standards and information technology. Join FCA Bethesda, Paul, and ISE partners for a discussion on the topic March 16th at the Bethesda North Marriott. To register, visit fciabethesda.com/marbreakfast.
You're listening to the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest in studio, choosing the three most important federal news stories of the week, according to them, are Rob Burton of Venable and Alan Balutis of Cisco. They've chosen those stories, ranked them in order from three down to one. We've posted them online at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and we're counting them down on the Federal News Countdown. Alan Balutis, your story number two is my colleague Jason Miller's story, headlined, "Will Budget Cuts Be Easier on the Heels of New GAO Report?" This report came out on Wednesday. It was going to be hyped as, Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma said Tuesday night, "This is going to make us all look like jackasses," referring to him and his colleagues in Congress, because by and large, a lot of these programs are there because various members pushed them on the agencies. It doesn't seem, though, to have gotten that kind of reaction. There are folks who are concerned about it, obviously, and there are folks at agencies that understand that Congress is going to call them and expect them to talk about some of these things and how they happen, but it doesn't seem to have generated the level of furor that I expected it would.
Besides the story by my friend Jason Scoop Miller, it also got pretty decent coverage 2 days straight in the Wall Street Journal. This GAO report with, and they always have such catchy titles, Opportunities to Reduce Potential Duplication in Government Programs, Save Taxpayer Dollars, and Enhance Revenue. So I think it confirms the obvious. It notes that the government has 15 different agencies overseeing food safety laws, more than 20 separate programs to help the homeless, and 80 programs for economic development. And, of course, argues that these overlapping and duplicative programs cost taxpayers billions of dollars. I think it will resonate in two ways. Obviously, both the administration and the Congress are looking now for savings. And if these savings can be achieved through eliminating overlapping and duplicative programs, that may be a relatively painless way toward achieving some of these very tough budget reductions that need to occur. But of course, as you recall as well, the president indicated in his State of the Union address that the last time there was a really hard look at the government organizations and structure was back in the era of black and white TV. So I have to presume he was referring to the Hoover Commission reports back in the 1950s. Mm-hmm. And OMB Deputy Director Jeff Zients is going to head up that kind of effort within the administration, taking a first look at some of the trade and economic programs and then moving on from there. So I think this is going to be an interesting area over the next couple of months. I think we'll see it emerge in the next couple of weeks as agencies start their budget hearings on the 2012 president's budget. And as Zients and his colleagues begin to roll out some of their insights and reports on this issue, hopefully springboarding off the good work that the GAO has done.
Rob, one of my friends in an agency this week, pretty high up at one of the cabinet level agencies, said, "What do you think this is going to mean?" And she said, "I think what this is going to mean is that there is going to be a tremendous amount of competition over the next couple of months to try to prove to Jeff Zients that your homeless program is the one that should stay, or one of the ones that should stay, if there are 20 different ones, as Jason cited. If we don't need them all, if GAO agrees that, and the agencies agree that, okay, some of these have to go and we'll consolidate them, then the folks that they're all going to want to stay. They're all going to want to keep their jobs and keep doing what they're doing. And so there's going to be this competition to be able to go to him and say, you should keep us and get rid of the others."
Francis, let me just say, the question in the article is, will budget cuts be easier on the heels of new GAO report? And my answer to that would be no. It is not going to be easier. And it goes to the point you're trying to make, that agencies love their programs. There is a real turf battle between agencies to be in charge of their programs, and they're not about to give them up. I've noticed this when I was at OFPP. we tried to consolidate and merge a lot of the government-wide acquisition vehicles, actually the MACs, the multiple award contract vehicles. There are probably over 50 of them. Many of them are duplicative. We wanted agencies basically to shed some of them, and no, we were not very successful in that regard because people want their own acquisition vehicles. They don't want to use another agency's acquisition vehicle. So consolidation is very hard. But GAO found that a lot of the duplicative programs are within the Department of Defense. However, we did not see the Deputy Secretary when he talked about cutting costs or not cutting costs. There was no comment there about trying to merge or do away with duplicative programs within DOD, which I think that should have been the emphasis as opposed to we're going to cut contracting. And so will this get the type of attention it needs? No, I don't think it will. And look at what Senator Coburn says we could save, over $100 billion a year if some of these programs were dispensed with. I think it's going to be very difficult, and knowing the bureaucracy as I do, I think it's going to be very tough, very tough indeed.
Yeah, I mean, I would just make a couple of points. I guess, one, it's not surprising to me that anyone would find duplication in what basically is a Fortune 1 company, given the size and complexity of the federal government. Two, reorganizations, and all you need to do is look back at our most recent, the creation of the Department of Homeland Security, can be very costly and time-consuming efforts to be able to streamline. But third, I'd just argue, listen, if we're looking at a 1950s kind of structure, shouldn't we be trying to approach the problem in other than a 1950s kind of way? I mean, moving the boxes around and tidying things up really is so old school. If we're really trying to achieve effectiveness and integrate programs, I think there's a lot more efficient and effective ways to do that given 21st century technologies and management theories than the way this report suggests we go about it.
One of the things that Jeff Zients has already talked about is trying to measure performance by the end result, trying to kind of combine programs across agencies. So there's already a thought by the administration to view the results in this way. And so it makes sense that they would theoretically, I guess, when you're trying to say, okay, we have a list now of all of the homeless programs, and let's, in addition to measuring the results, let's also decide which ones are going to stay and which ones shouldn't.
The problem, Francis, is you have people that run these programs and work on these programs, and then each agency has to decide, well, what do we do with these people if we don't have this program? You certainly are not going to let them go. That's not an option. You know, this, and I think one point that needs to be made here is that this GAO report is interesting in that it collects a lot of the information GAO has collected
with respect to duplication
over the years. But it's not new news. You know, in my view, this is not new news. We've known about duplicative government programs for decades, but it seems like what's new is that it's put into one place. It's co-located.
Well, the other thing that may be new, Rob, is that we may be in an era where we want to actually address some of these kinds of things. You have to look at some of the pressures for budget reductions overall and some of the fervor and energy that the Tea Party Republicans are bringing to the House and say, you know, have the times changed enough where we're really going to step up and address these kinds of things as we haven't been able to do in the past?
Do you think times have changed like that, Alan?
I think times, in fact, have changed, and I think what we're seeing in the states augurs for some of those changes at the federal level as well.
It seems to me, Rob, to be kind of not a warning shot exactly, but we always say the states are the places where you can learn and apply.
The laboratories of democracy.
That's the phrase I was looking for and couldn't think of. Thank you for saving me. You're good at that, Alan. So if we look at the states and see this is what they're dealing with and potentially what we could have, it seems to me it's an opportunity for the federal government and for Congress to say, let's try to not get ourselves to a point where some of these states are, like you mentioned, Governor Brown in California is really in an awful state.
Francis, I think that Congress is going to have to really take the lead here. I do not see the agencies or OMB successfully addressing the duplication problem.
Because they won't or because they can't?
Because it's just too hard.
Yeah.
And I think it's always easier when Congress passes a law and says you must do it, as opposed to voluntarily doing it.
I agree to some extent with Rob. I think the answer may, in fact, be something along the Hoover Commission lines, where you bring in a very distinguished leader from outside and you put together a group that includes representatives from the executive branch, the House and the Senate, that would try to deal with this challenge.
Rob, Alan Balutis' story number two on the countdown is Jason Miller's story headlined, "Will Budget Cuts Be Easier on the Heels of the New GAO Report?" That story and the GAO report linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. That means we have just one number one story from each of our gentlemen to talk about on the Federal News Countdown. And we'll do that next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Nominations are now open for the 4th Annual AFSEA Bethesda Government-Wide Initiatives Excellence Awards. These awards recognize individuals or a group of individuals whose contributions in information technology have significance beyond their agency or organization. To make a nomination, go to afseabethesda.com/nomination. Nominations are for government employees only, but can be made by government or industry partners. Go to afseabethesda.com/nomination. Deadlines for nominations, Monday, March 21st.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
Tony Scardino, a chief financial officer at the Patent and Trademark Office.
CRs are debilitating. They're starting to go longer and longer. Problem is, once you actually get an appropriation, usually you get a budget increase or you get a budget decrease. How are you going to manage that over the next X amount of months to get you to the end of the fiscal year? Well, that's really challenging. Think of your procurement staff, all the contracts you have to continually reaward for shorter periods.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
It's the Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown stories this week selected by Alan Balutis of Cisco and Rob Burton of Venable. And we're up to...
Number one!
The Singers have a pay freeze, too. I put a pay freeze in effect, so they're a little hesitant sometimes.
Cut back there.
Well, everybody's, you know, it's tough times all around. Story number one this week is kind of common to both of you. Alan, your take on the shutdown is headlined, "Tech America Warns of Shutdown Consequences." That's a NextGov story. And Rob, you chose the New York Times story headlined, "Obama Signs Two-Week Budget Extension," from yesterday. And the whole idea of the shutdown, well, first of all, my question all along has been, are we, all of us, not just the media, but everybody who's thinking about these things and cares about how government operates, are we all too much in an uproar about the possibility of a shutdown? Or do you think the possibility is, first of all, that likely, and second of all, that disruptive and catastrophic? Rob,
well, Francis, one reason I chose the New York Times article is it did not have the word shutdown in it. It says Obama signs two-week budget extension. And I was so tired of hearing about the shutdown.
Right.
That I thought, boy, this one's good. It just highlights the basic fact of what happened, as opposed to what might happen.
Yeah.
And as you know, Francis, the last time there was a government shutdown was 1995.
Right.
It did not last an inordinate amount of time, and federal employees were compensated. They got their pay. Now, it did impact some contractors.
Contractors,
but again,
didn't get their pay.
That's right. Mm-hmm. It's true. But again, it was not for an extraordinarily long period of time. 1995 was the last time it happened. And so and what were the consequences of that? Well, the Republicans arguably lost the 1996 presidential election because the Republicans were blamed for the shutdown back then.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they suffered at the polls. So I think hopefully there's lessons learned here by both the Democratic and Republican parties that we don't want to be blamed for any shutdown. My guess is that none will occur because both parties will be very worried about being blamed for it. And there is a presidential election next year, the last time I looked.
Yep.
And so here we are again. My guess is they will not allow history to repeat itself, and they will not have a shutdown the year before a presidential election.
Mm-hmm.
I think that will be heavy on everybody's minds. And, of course, some of my friends in the federal government are hoping for one because they think that means really just a couple of days off because they did get paid last time.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to change my number one and go instead with the story, Burton predicts no shutdown, as my headline story here.
That's fantastic.
I think some of the interesting issues are just within the undercurrent in the following sense. I mean, I think Rob makes a good point in terms of what are the politics of the situation, and will in fact the Republicans bear the consequences that they did in 95-96 of the shutdown. It really did lead to some change in political leadership back then, and I'm not sure that's the same situation today. I also have to say I was struck by, and I think it was Ed O'Keefe's stories in the Washington Post, about the number of employees that were deemed essential last time through. It was staggering kinds of numbers. So, again, there's some choice the administration will have about whether they make either, would dub it maybe a soft and a hard shutdown of government, mm-hmm. just how serious they make this. But the other piece of this is, you know, it's 15, 16 years later since this happened. A lot of the things that were done still manually back then are now all parts of big automated systems. I mean, checks get processed. The government continues to a large extent. So are we going to see the same kinds of effects and consequences if, in fact, a shutdown occurs? I'm hopeful, like Rob, that it can be avoided. But I think there's pretty serious differences between the $3 or $4 billion in cuts the Democrats are putting out there and the $60+ billion of cuts the Republicans in the House are suggesting need be made.
I had the deputy director for management at OMB during the shutdown, John Koskinen, on the show on Wednesday. And where he went right away, I thought was very interesting. We talked a little bit about the shutdown and the logistics involved and so on, but he went voluntarily right to the what happened after the shutdown. And I think that was really insightful because it was kind of to what you were talking about earlier, Rob, about how we're focused on this and so on and so forth. There's an after the shutdown. The shutdown will end, if there ever is one, at some point. And being focused on getting back to work or being focused on just keeping doing your job, if you do have to leave for a couple days or a couple weeks or whatever, you're going to have to come back and continue doing what you're doing. So being in a position to be able to do that, I thought was, in my view, the most instructive thing that I took from his comments.
So I make a couple points. One, Alan makes an important point about the number of essential employees in the federal government, and folks need to understand that if there is a shutdown, essential employees continue to go to work.
Mm-hmm.
I think over the last 15, 16 years, the number of employees designated as essential have increased fairly dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if there is a shutdown, the essential employees continue to go to work. The other point I might make, Francis, is one that hasn't been made, is what the impact of a shutdown is before the shutdown.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of the most negative consequences are occurring right now because OMB has gone out to every federal agency saying, give me your plan. I've got to get your plan. What are you going to do if there is a shutdown?
Mm-hmm.
An enormous amount of workforce time is being spent right now on developing plans for a potential shutdown, which I suppose is necessary, but if one does not occur, boy, that's a lot of wasted time.
Well, is it wasted time, or is it just time that right now could have been expended on something else but is useful potentially at some other point, do you think, Alan?
I think having done a good bit of this, I mean, having spent a large part of my career doing management and budget and doing these kind of drills, I don't know that it causes extensive harm and a loss of productivity across the agency as a whole, separate from the kind of sword hanging over the head of a lot of federal employees as they think about, will I be into work next week or not? But again, I mean, if you looked at some of the Post stories about this, you had a number of agencies where 65, 70+% of the employees were deemed essential mm-hmm. last time through.
Social Security is one of those.
Well, you know, but again, a lot of the Social Security processes, including the checks, have been automated.
But somebody's got to be there to push the button, right? I mean,
do you have a handful of employees or do you have 70% of your workforce there?
Mm-hmm.
Again, I think a lot of these decisions are small p political rather than managerial decisions in terms of whether you want a hard or a soft shutdown and the consequences you want to impose on the public.
Both of my guests on the Federal News Countdown this week have chosen stories about the shutdown potential shutdown as their number one news stories of the week. Alan Balutis of Cisco Systems and Rob Burton of Venable on the Federal News Countdown this week. And we'll wrap up our conversation about the shutdown and what we've learned and what may be ahead when we continue with the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Place a deposit for full season tickets now and reserve your spot for the 2011-2012 season. Deposits are fully refundable and can be used towards other ticket purchases while retaining your place in line for full season plans next season. For more info on placing your full season ticket deposit, call 202-266-CAPS or log on to WashingtonCAPS.com and do your part in building America's hockey capital.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
This is J.J. Green. For the Marine Corps, the term Semper Fidelis is a way to distinguish itself from any other service. The Latin term means always faithful. It became their motto in 1883 and guides them to remain faithful to the mission at hand, to each other, to the Corps, and to the country, no matter what. The Marine Corps says there's no such thing as an ex-Marine. Once a Marine, always a Marine. If you have stories about the Marines or any other distinguished service member, drop me a line at jgreen@wtop.com.
There's a saying that lightning never strikes the same place twice. Airport operators know that's not the case, which is why they rely on Airink to provide the most advanced lightning warning systems available. It allows personnel to get to safety, then back out on the tarmac in the shortest amount of time to keep you moving. For more information and career opportunities, log on to ARINC.com.
HCMF Federal Recruitment and Talent Management Strategy Day is a one-day training conference to be held Wednesday, May 4th, 2011 in Washington, D.C. The conference will focus on new opportunities for bringing in top talent to the federal government, such as marketing and brand strategies, investing in employee development, and more. Keynotes will be presented by OPM Director John Barry, as well as presentations from seven other Chief Human Capital Officers. For more information, please visit HCMFRecruitmentDay.com.
We're back on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Story number one this week from both Rob Burton and Alan Balutis talking about the potential shutdown. And, of course, we're in a situation where we were supposed to, if a shutdown was going to happen, it was going to happen tonight. We now have a two-week extension, so 2 weeks from tonight is when it would happen. Rob, you're already on record as saying you don't think it's going to happen. Alan, I'm going to pin you now to the wall because you kind of you didn't give a definitive opinion. You said you're a little less sanguine than Rob, but where do you think we'll be 2 weeks from now?
I'm concerned, Francis, because I think Speaker Boehner is trying to work through an agreement, but I think with the almost 100 Tea Party Republicans that have been elected, I could see him coming to some agreement with the Senate and with the White House. And by the time the talk show hosts had at it, by the time he got back to Capitol Hill, the whole thing could come undone. When you look at the still dramatic difference, $60+ billion in cuts coming out of the Republican House, the Senate now only offering up $4 to $6 billion in additional cuts, that's a huge difference to try to overcome in a short period of time. I think the threat of a shutdown still remains hanging over us.
I apologize for misleading you during the break, Rob. I could tell you were itching at the end of the last segment, and so I'm going to give you the last word since I failed to recognize you coming out of the commercials.
Oh, you're a good man.
Well,
you know,
cruel but fair is the way they view me around the station.
The bottom line here is...
I think you always liked him better.
the bottom line here is a lot of political posturing. Everybody says the sky is falling. They want to blame the others if the sky falls. I think that more likely than a shutdown, we'll have another extension. I mean, there's no reason Congress can't keep extending throughout 2011 if they want to, just keeping the keeping us at 2010 levels. Of course, you have the Secretary of Defense in this New York Times article saying the world will end, the military will be terribly impacted if we don't get our 2011 budget. But the bottom line is, this is very political.
They have reached an agreement on 2011.
Remember, I get the last word.
No fighting. Make sure you get it right.
The bottom line is, I can see another extension coming. Well, 2 weeks in government terms is not much time.
And the Speaker has talked about doing that exact thing, about just continuing, we'll just pass another 2 week and another 2 week and another 2 week, and that will make people at the agencies just bananas.
Won't it? That's true.
Oh, but it'll also have a devastating effect on the private sector in terms of some of the contracts.
But, you know, the bottom line, Francis, is something really does have to be done. I mean, we really do have to cut the budget, and no one wants to deal with the hard work that's involved with doing that. And it's time. It's time. And the Department of Defense is going to have to step up to the plate, because as goes DOD, goes the rest of the government. DOD is going to have to make some hard choices and cut.
All right, and that is the last word on the Federal News Countdown this week with Alan Baludis and Rob Burton. And gentlemen, thank you. It's a pleasure, as always, to have both of you on
the
program today.
Thanks for having us. Happy to do it.
The Federal News Countdown stories, and shortly the audio posted at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The door.